Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's a Tuesday morning. I don't have anybody yet for the Parsha Daf Torah, so let me do something for Mishpachas Stefanski, who have gotten up from the Shiva for Bezalel's father-in-law, Rabbi Karlinsky. And again, Sholni Ab Simchas. I was thinking, because as we know, the Omer is on. I haven't had much time to devote to that, really. Now I finally finished marking my papers and sending in the grades, so I have a little more time. We are looking at Lag BaOmer coming up any day, and I didn't give any much talk to the historical problems associated with the story of the students of Rabbi Akiva. I'll explain what I mean by that right now. Everybody knows that Sfira is several things. Knows it's a mitzvah, Sfira's Omer, and all the rest of it. And one of the things is that Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died, and therefore you have all the minhagim of Sfira, not to take a shave, and married, and all that business. And the story is, as we all know in the Gemara, that students of Rabbi Akiva died, I think, between Pesach and Atzeres. I think that's the Lashon over there. Which is why some keep the whole in 49 days, and some say Pesach at pros Atzeres. And that's where you get all the customs of different ways of holding Sfira, meaning holding the restriction rituals. Now, so Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students, and they died, according to that story. It's always been very obscure how and exactly when that happened. The Gemara says they all died of asgrod, of choking, you know, diphtheria, something like that. Croup, one of those types of things. So in other words, there was a magefa. If, indeed, it's literally that way, if that happened, it's not so hard to understand simply because, this is how I understand anyway, I can only tell you the way I understand it. Imagine a giant base medrash or a bunch of batei midrashas. I mean, what I'm about to say will become very clear in the context of the corona, at least from the Baltimore point of view. And that is, if they got one of these illnesses, only one or two of them had to get it, and then it spread like wildfire, if they're all packed together in a room, learning bitzfufim, it's not possible that he had a yeshiva with 24,000 guys. What it means is he had a system of yeshivas. Correct? I mean, physically, how do you have 24,000 people in one place all the time? That's not even how they did in those days. We're assuming that, you see, yeshiva, you're thinking of Lakewood, there, Yisrael, Punavish, you know, one of these places where everybody sits in a big room and learns. That's not how it was once upon a time, because nowadays they got something called books. And remember, they didn't have books in those days. So whatever yeshiva was, ran on a different system. You understand? Ran on a different system, and it wasn't books. And so you just have to reimagine. Now, we don't know exactly how it was because we don't know. So you have to imagine, you know, as best you can, what it means to have a yeshiva once upon a time when everything is oral, when it's balpe. This is interesting what I'm saying. But again, they didn't have one gigantic big room with 24,000 students. It's too much. LMI, he had something, again, I'm telling you my understanding. They have something like a network of yeshivas. Think of the Chavetz Chaim network, or in Europe, the Navardic network, or, you know, Chabad is a network of school. You know what I'm saying? Not all in one place, but they're all part of some particular framework. So, if you had 24,000 students, it means you're unbelievably charismatic, obviously. And there are people who wouldn't learn the Akiva style. What's the Akiva style? You know, Gemara says he had his way of presenting the stuff, so the Mishnah, the Tosefta, the Medrash Halacha, all come from Akiva students. I think, and they call them Stim Tusa. Look, Stim Tusa, maybe. It's on the first daf of Megillah, Gemar Megillah. You can see over there. It says all the quote-unquote books, all the things that became Tannaitic literature, Mishnah, Tosefta, and Medrash Halacha, Medrash Halacha, Michal de Sefer Zeri, were all students of Rabbi Akiva. Hold on one second. I can't believe the junk they sent me. Anyway, Anyhow, the point goes like this, that Yad Rebbe Akiva, of course, and he had his style of learning different than others, and Talmidim are drawn to whatever style they're drawn to, and obviously his was the one that took off in his tekufa, and therefore he had, like I said before, a network of schools, yeshivas. Remember, they had the Archikal system in Bubble. Maybe they had something like that over here. That way the yeshiva doesn't have to pay for your, you know, support. You get together once or twice a year. You see what I'm saying? That was the old system. It's different than today. So let's assume, for example, intelligently, that he had something along the lines I just described. And so really everybody is highly decentralized. People learn in their own towns and villages, their own synagogues and that sort of thing. But once a year, twice a year, three times a year, four times a year, however, they all get together. So then it becomes mamish-like amazing. I mean, just imagine 24,000 students getting together, Rabbi Akiva, in any one time and place. It's like the, what do they call it? The Daf Yomi extravaganzas. Right, 24,000. Right? You know, with like 1,000 people. Madison Square Garden, that sort of thing. This is the meaning that he had 24,000. What I'm trying to say is like this. Think a little bit realistically about the logistics that are implied by that number, right? If we take the number as face value, which they seem to do, I mean, I believe it. But then, like I said, but logistically, that was something. Because don't tell me he had breakfast, lunch, and supper three times a day for 24,000 students. That's beyond, you know, Reichman already, you know. It's, but rather, you had this decentralized business. The only thing is, how shall I put it? At certain periods, they got together. If that's what happened, it's very easy to say a few guys got croup or diphtheria or some kind of throat business. And in that kind of a room or that kind of a swoofing, everybody packed together, spread like wildfire. That would be a scientific explanation of what happened. Of course, it's min ha-shamayim that it should happen that way. You understand? But that would be the way it would seem to have happened. It's not the way Jewish people understand it. It's famous that the way Iger Shurigon, I must have done this in the past. He says there was a shmad, a shamdo, but you never know what that means. A shmad mean, you know, the Romans killed him, or does it mean something else, or something like that. Hold on for a second. I'm sorry. That's what happens when we do it in the mornings. But this is the system that we're saying over here. You understand? Now the question, of course, is, how exactly or when exactly did this happen, and what are the contexts? This is not pashut at all. When you try to be historical about it, I'm going with the Chazals now, right? Not with the secular three. Although you have to combine the two in a certain amount. So let's figure this out. Rabbi Akiva famously died after Bar Kokhba with the Sarhur Gemalchus, you know, or whatever you call it, the Hadrianic persecutions. So that's in the second half of the 130s CE. Not BC, but CE. Okay? So because the Bar Kokhba rebellion was like 135, 136, I'm not going to look it up, is in the middle 130s. And the death of Rabbi Akiva came sometime after that. So let's say, for argument's sake, let's call it 138 CE, right? Maybe it's off a year or two. According to Chazal, Rabbi Akiva lived 120 years. That's why he had so much stuff packed in his life. That's a long time, but they say there's three Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I forget the third one. They all lived 120 years. And even if you say 120 is a round figure, but let's go with that, okay? So that means, let's say he was killed, executed in 138. So that means he was born in 18, right? In the year 18 of the Common Era, CE, you know, like we do now. So, okay. Now, the story is, see, here are the problems. The story is he was 40 when he became from. You know that, and I know that. Again, is that an exact number? But let's go with it. So if he was born in 40, if he was born in 18, even though 40 is 58, the year 58 when he became from. So that's weird, because the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed 12 years later, which is very interesting, because the story of Rabbi Akiva, as you know, the way it's told is that, you know, he married Rachel, and she's endured privation and absence, and he learned, I think, for 12 years, is that right? And then he learned for another 12 years. It's very, very interesting, because if what I just said is true, if he was born, let's say, for example, in the year 18, and he became from the year 58, then Itaka was 12 years later when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. So that would really put a spin on the story where, you know, she was doing without his presence, and he showed up 12 years later, as according to famous story, meaning that would be the year the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And she said, and that means her father went broke, because Kalbasu was one of three rich guys in the siege of Jerusalem. And you know the story, like I know the story, that they all burned each other's store. The Beryonim burned everybody's warehouses and things like that. So he was busted as a result of the Korban, where the whole city of Jerusalem was destroyed, literally. And so that's just interesting. If what I just said is true, see, here's the wife whose father is a richy rich, although he wasn't giving him much, if anything. And then Rabbi Akiva shows up in yeshiva. It's like a very yeshivish sort of story. He shows the yeshiva totally out of it, meaning he started with Yochum and Zakai, didn't he, or something like that? He shows in the middle of the war, time of the Korban. It's like a guy from America who's in yeshiva and then shows up, you know, during the Holocaust or something like that. Or maybe showed up after Romans finished destroying everything, face up, and she says, go for another 12 years. So that would put him around the year 72. Now, the story is that by that time, by the year 70, by the time he was, he would be 52 years old. So he's learned for 12 years. And obviously he surpassed everybody else. That's very easy to understand. We all know people, I've said this many times, at least in my time in Near Israel, there were guys who were BTs, you know, from Harvard, Yale, or this and that and the other, and they never knew nothing about nothing. And then they became from, and they threw themselves into the learning, whether here in Baltimore, or maybe it was in, or Sameach, one of those places. And within a short time, they knew as much as anybody else, or more, which has only been a time in the yeshiva system, because here you put in 12 years this and 5 years this. How come this guy who just started knows this more than you? But that's a separate shmooze. So when he was already 52 years old, he must have been incredibly charismatic, if you go by that story. And he already had 12,000 students. And then I think she said, stay another 12 years. That's where he got the other 12,000 students. So that would put it in the year 82, if that's right. Now, he died, according to the story, in Bar Kokhba time, which is many years later. Those who assert, and it's mamash a total guess, I don't think it's true, but it's a famous guess of the Maskilim and sometimes some of the Rabbanim in the 19th century, I think, were influenced by the Maskilim argument, which is that the students died in the Bar Kokhba rebellion. If that's true, then when they say they died from Oscar and all the rest of it, that's a euphemism. They're afraid to say what happened to the Romans killed them. First of all, why wouldn't they say the Romans killed them? They're afraid of the censors. I mean, there's nothing anti-Roman in that. Romans say, damn right we killed them. You know, we don't like them. Like I say, it's a famous theory, but and it's very attractive if you're looking for a certain type of mahalach. But it doesn't really work. I remember the Duras Rishonim, there's a whole rikus to argue against it, but he said that this happened prior to the destruction of Beis Hamikdash, because part of his argument, the Duras Rishonim, you know, you can read it, the Wigner Miller book, The Torah Nation, tries to reprise it in English, is you non-from historians and maskilim, you all say things were going down the tubes in the period before the Beis HaMikdash, and the country was in a decadent phase because of the, you read Josephus, and it's certainly very decadent, and it's backed up by the Gemara that says that they stopped doing Din and Nefashas and Sota and all that in the decades before the Korban Beis HaMikdash. And so it sounds like the whole place was going to the devil in a handpot. And Zukta the Durs Rishonin, you're all wrong. And actually 99.9% of people were super from. This is what he says. They're super from. And this the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva were from that time. And they all left their families the way he did. So in other words, the proof that people were super from was they did the old school. I mean, we don't have this nowadays, I don't think. Where, I mean, people really left their families, the wives and children, to fend for themselves. And they went and devoted themselves to learning. This is very non-American, I mean, right now. You see? In America, a guy can be in kolo all you want. I mean it. But, you know, he should come home at night and have some shaykh with his family. You don't let the kids just vulgar suck around like weeds. But they saw it differently long ago. And I'm trying to evoke the era that we associate with the students of Rabbi Akiva. And so the Durs Rishonim says that it all happened prior to the year 70, when the Beis HaMikdash was still around, to show you how frum everybody was. Problem with that is he didn't have, if you do the numbers, as I just did, if he's born in 18 approximately, then, and he was 52 at the time of the Korban, according to the story, he didn't have 24,000 students at that time. If you go with that Mahalach of the Durs Rishonim of Avigdor Miller, then they would have perished approximately in the year 70, which would put a whole different spin on it. It has nothing to do with Bar Kokhba rebellion. It has to do with the other war of the Romans, the war of Titus, where the base of Mesia, everything was destroyed. And they were like part of that. Look, I don't know, it could be, but the years don't work out. If you go by the regular, he had 24,000 students by the year 82. He lived another 50 years or so, a little more than 50 years if you go by the numbers. Right? I mean, if he lived to be 120, he was 52 in Korban, figure it out yourself. And therefore, the years that he had this gigantic following would be in the 80s and 90s. And then into the year 100 CE, 110, 120, in those years. That's the Tekufa, right? That's the Tekufa. And if you go plainly by the Gemara, then this would have nothing to do with politics. Somewhere in the 80s or the 90s or the year 100 to 120 or 100 to 130, prior to the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, somewhere in that half century came the episode where they all died. Right? Now again, it was a Magepha. So in other words, if they say they died over the course of 50 days, it's much like the corona, right? You know, this one caught it, and this one caught it, and this one caught it, and they all caught it from each other. That's what it seems like. So the fact that they all died from the same thing is not surprising at all. It's much what happened to corona. You know, one person got it, and the other one caught it from him, the other one caught it from him, and they all died from the same cause. Now, the Chazal, of course, as I understand it, in that Gemara, are saying if they die from choking in some form or another, was diphtheria or croup or whatever, I'm not a doctor. So Shema Minah had something to do with their peh, with their mouth. Get it? With their throat. Why would it be they all die from choking? Right? And Davka, these Talmidei Chachamim and all the rest of it. Yes, it started as a epidemic. In other words, I'll say it again. The contagious aspect of it is easy to understand. That's probably what happened, as far as I know. Because, again, 24,000 are not in one place. They're in a whole bunch of different locations, but they come together. So when you have a big convention, everybody's hawking, especially in those days there were no books. So learning means you're learning bal peh. So let's just pretend you and I were there. And you and I were chavrusas. So we're spending all day long looking at each other, coughing at each other, hacking with each other, screaming at each other like they do in yeshivas. What I'm trying to say is like this. From a corona point of view, it's a nightmare. Nobody had masks, to use modern terminology. You get it? So it's easy to understand its spread. Chazal, in their wisdom, the way it's presented in the Gemara, say that if it happened, Dafka, like I say, to this gigantic yeshiva system, not just one yeshiva, the whole network, it's like saying, this Novartic place went down in Poland, and then that Novartic place went down in Poland, and then that Novartic place went down in Poland. You know what I mean? In other words, it's all the same reshes, the whole same network of schools. So if they died from something that's associated with what I just said, right? If it's associated with that, then it means that it can't be coincidental. And the fact that it happened in the mouth means they must have done something in the mouth. And, that would be Lo Nagu Kavod Elazeh. Either said Lashar. We don't know what Lo Nagu Kavod Elazeh means. There's a different way of organizing this, right? And I know there's different ways of organizing this. But meaning they spoke ill of each other, or they didn't stand up when the other one walked in the room. Who knows? I mean, literally, who knows? But obviously something in that department. If it was anything like the world today, yeshiva people are, this guy doesn't really learn, that guy's just a bucky, this one's his, Islamist is no good, that kind of thing. And they shouldn't have been that way. And as a result, they had this terrible plague. This terrible Megave, this terrible plague. Okay. Fine. Second here. Getting all these emails to have to take care of. So this puts something of an attempt to put a historical framework on it. Now, again, what would any of this... So it would be independent of the Bar Kokhba rebellion or anything like that. And you could learn it simply as in a Musar Vart type of way, which is, Talmidei Chachamim, you weren't in the right Madrega. But if you're putting it in the historical context, at least as I understand it, it would be very interesting because one thing we know from that era is that you had to keep your big fat mouth shut like Gabi the Romans. I don't know how Rabbi Akiva pulled it off to have a network of schools like this and not have the Romans be suspicious that something's going on, which eventually they were not wrong about, because he is supposed to back the Bar Kokhba rebellion. If he backed the Bar Kokhba rebellion, it means he didn't like the Romans ruling Israel. You can be sure their spies know about this. And the Romans were very good at spying. Remember that story where they infiltrated with two Roman agents, the Rabbi Gamliel school, and they didn't know who they were. And at the end, they presented themselves. They show FBI over here. And Rabbi Gamliel was scared. But they said, we've seen that this is basically not a political operation. And therefore, how's it go? I think it's a Tosefta. With the exception of two rules, why is it that a shor shel Yisrael shenogach a shor shel goy doesn't have to pay? A shor shel goy shenogach a shor shel Yisrael does have to pay. In other words, that's a racism. But since it's only 1% of the religious stuff and all the rest of it is okay, davrzela masrina malchus, we will not tell you. That should be a movie. You understand? So you see. It was a time when you really had to worry about spies, infiltrators, and people keeping their big fat mouth shut. I think that's also the story from Gamliel, when he was deposed. So they added new safsalim to the base manager. You remember that story in Brachas? And, Rabbi, and Lozan Zai became the head. And before that, Rabbi Gamliel had a policy, Tochu Kabaro. You only allow somebody in Tochu Kabaro, which means his inside is like his outside, which means he's absolutely transparent in his honesty. You don't have to worry about him squealing. Because the spy that I'm talking about, see, what does it mean, Tochu Kabaro? You can learn it to mean like this. It's a mussar for art. Don't be a hypocrite. Be tohu kabaro. Inside should be outside. Or you can learn it as a reflection of political delicacy at that time, which is, how do you know the guy's not going to tell the Romans to you? So you got to be tohu kabaro. The problem is that you're reducing the number of people that you admit into yeshiva to learn Torah. You can be sure Rabbi Gamliel had good reasons for doing what he did, but the others didn't agree with that policy, as you know. And in the end, you know, their way, they added the safsalon. But it was an era of great fear. I'll give you an example to my mind how it's like. You ever read from 100 years ago, literally, this is, now is the year 2024, go back to 1924. There were these secret yeshivas for a while in Soviet Union. Some were Lubavitch in Minsk. Some were not Lubavitch. They tried. Now, eventually, I think Stalin, you know, they caught them all. I think. If they didn't, then there were very few exceptions. Maybe a couple of, seriously, I think it was a little Lubavitch here and there. But it was very, very hard. And you really had to worry about informers. And me, myself, and I was in Soviet Union in 1983. And I was stupid enough to talk to an informer. You know, it's very hard unless you're, so you got to be tohu gabar, you got to be on the ball. And if the students of Rabbi Akiva, guy from Askara, it sounds also, you know, like it's a problem of tohu gabar, meaning it's a problem of, you know, keeping quiet, right? So the keeping quiet can go two ways. Keeping quiet and don't say anything derogatory about someone else. And keeping quiet is also means that you can, you know, go ahead and not say anything that could be picked up by somebody else and used by the Romans, which, of course, is precisely the story of Shimon ben Yochai, right? And Lag Bomer. The guy squealed at him, not on purpose. Who was it? Yehuda ben Gerim or something like that? Not on purpose. He just talked too much. You understand? And then we have this plague of people choking, meaning that, is talking too much. So, meaning it sounds like a reflection of that. So I'm just trying to touch on Rashi Prakim over here, that when we deal with trying to locate an agadah, which obviously took off because we all have the sphere of practices, even though I think the earliest references to that is in the Tshuva Segaonim, if I remember correctly. You know, it's not in the Gemara anywhere that there's a meaning not to get married and not cut your hair and all that. But it's obviously taken off. So we're dealing with a mysterious chapter in Jewish history. And the question is, you know, how exactly it's located. So I've shared with you today some of the historical problematics if you try to approach it historically, even going with the Gemaras now, and how it fits in. Anyway, it's a little bit of food for thought. Again, I want to thank, as always, Mishpachas Stefanski for sponsoring. And I'm hoping that we'll find people for the Parsha Daftar. I actually want to say something about Biden also. So see if we can come with three people this week, three sponsors. But anyway, as of now, I wish everybody a good week.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.